Learning finances is way easier than your day job. It's way easier than all these hard years of work that you had to put in to become a physician. And just a little bit of learning will go a long way.
Good day. Welcome to Ripple's Physicians Wellbeing, a space to discuss coping with stressors while training in the field of medicine and tips for overall wellness.
Learn more about the wellness home services at gmuwellness.utesca.edu. And don't forget to subscribe to stay updated with new episodes wherever you enjoy podcasts.
Welcome everyone, and thank you. Last month's episode, we explored some aspects of financial domains as we are addressing well-being of all the 8 domains that are interdependent. As always, we do this with the hopes that we can offer you important, relevant, and practical information to take care of your wellness. And this month, we have a very special guest, Mr. Andrew Paulson, lead student loan consultant and co-founder of studentloanadvice.com. a white coat investor company. He'll be providing us information about how residents can financially become knowledgeable and how to manage their finances. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. So during this episode, we're going to explore the financial domain and ways in which it can affect well-being. And spoiler alert, it can in a major way. So welcome, Andrew. What are some common mistakes that medical residents that you deal with make with managing their loans?
Yeah, great question, John. And I think one of the biggest ones that I see is when you're graduating medical school and you're starting residency, you've got this mortgage of student loans that you have to deal with. And I think a lot of people think that they're going to have to start making a monthly payment that's $4,000 or $5,000 or something along those lines. That is probably not too far off what you're making, what your take-home pay as a resident. And it's just, you throw up your hands and you say, I can't make these payments, and they enter forbearance. Mm-hmm. That is probably the number one mistake that I see a lot of residents take, is instead of looking at some of the alternative options to forbearance, they'll just say, you know what, I can't handle this, and they'll enter forbearance. And that's usually one of the biggest mistakes that you can make, because one thing that will continue to happen is your loans will continue to grow or accrue interest even while they're in forbearance. And then once you exit that forbearance, which is basically withholding payments, that interest that is accumulated on your student loan will then capitalize, or it'll compound. And it's this principle of interest accumulating on interest. And I mean, something that we'll probably talk a little bit later today is about loan forgiveness, but forbearance doesn't count towards any of the loan forgiveness tracks. So, and then I think one of the other big things is that you've just graduated from medical school and you're starting residency in July as an intern, and you allow your loans to go into what's called a grace period. And that period of time is really this 6-month leeway that you have to kind of get your feet under you, get settled, get moved if you have to, right? But the trouble with it is that your loans will continue to grow during the grace period, and your clock for forgiveness, loan forgiveness, doesn't start until you move into repayment, which is likely November or even December of your intern year. So that's a big thing that you'll want to consider, is to get out of that grace period and to move your loans into repayment right away. And you can do that through consolidation. And then the other thing I would say too is, for those of you that are carrying private student loans, usually they are pretty high interest rate. And sometimes I even see those at double digits.
Yes.
Well, just so you know, when you're making money as a resident, you might be able to do what's called a private refinance. And what that can allow you to do with your private student loans, we're not talking about federal right now, is you could actually potentially bring down your interest rates. Because when you're borrowing, when you're a student, you don't usually have a whole lot of income or job history. And sometimes you have savings and those sort of things. But now that you're making money as a resident, you can usually apply and you've got a stronger credit situation. So that's another thing that I would consider is to not put off private refinancing, private student loans.
To lower that interest rate to something more manageable than
exactly
10%,
12%. Where I see all the time, you know, resident, they had to borrow, let's say that they needed a little bit of money to go from, to just, you know, a lot of people borrow for undergrad too, mm-hmm. whereas sure. with medical school, you can borrow whatever you need up to the cost of attendance federally. And they have these double digit private student loans, and they just don't know that they're there really, and that they're that high. So you can usually get that down somewhere in the 5-7% interest rate range through refinancing.
Yeah. So much better. Much better.
Well, that's good.
And just for our audience, can you just do a quick definition of forbearance for those that may not know what that means?
Yeah. So forbearance is a status for federal student loans where it will allow you to temporarily withhold payment, whether it's you can't make the payment or you're out of a job temporarily. So effectively, you don't have to make a monthly payment temporarily. Usually up to a year, they allow you to do that and enter that.
But during that time, the interest on your loan amount still accrues.
Exactly. And the point there, John, is that let's say you have $200,000 of student loans, and your loans, you go into forbearance and they start to grow. And let's say that your loans are growing at, I don't know, $20,000 a year is the interest. So then when you come out of that forbearance, that $20,000 of interest that's accumulated on your loans, that will capitalize or it will compound onto your student loan balance when you exit that forbearance. So instead of your loan growing off at $200,000, now it is growing off at $220,000. So it can make, and then, you know, with that being a higher principal balance, the loan will start to grow a little bit faster. So that's something that we really try to avoid up front.
Thank you. That is so important. And I'm so glad you put numbers. When you listen to numbers, it's scary. Yes, thank you. Andrew, we would love to hear your thoughts on how residents can prioritize their loan payment. Still, they have to manage day-to-day finance. And I see either they do one or the other. So how can they prioritize both in a way, make allowance for both?
You know, and because you, and the exciting thing is now that you're working as residents, is you're making a paycheck, right? And you're able to really start perfecting your craft. All those hard, you know, years and hours of research and medical school and service and all those things, this is now on display, and you can really start, you know, perfecting your craft as a physician. But you just don't have a ton of money to be able to put aside to your student loans. So one of the best ways to address repayment, and what maybe we'll start with, how do you address your federal student loans? And that's what most of you have and will generally be the largest amount, and those that you had to borrow for medical school. You have a couple of options. There's a 10-year repayment program that's fixed monthly payments. You also have a 25-year plan that's called extended. So obviously the extended plan that's over 25 years would be a lot lower monthly payment. But even aside from that, there's what's called income-driven repayment options, where they will base your payment off of your income. So if you're making $60,000 as a resident and you're single, it's about a monthly payment of $300 per month. And really, as long as you're in training, it'll probably range from $250 to like $400 a month. That can be a lot more digestible than a $1,000 payment or a $2,000 monthly payment, because they base the payments off of your income. And then they also factor in your household size. So if you're married or if you have a couple of kids, you can get a little bit of a larger deduction based on your household size. And that's the sort of thing that they do when they're looking at your taxes as well, that a little larger household size, you get a few more deductions here and there. So that is really the best repayment program for you as a resident, is to look into income-driven repayment. And there's four different income-driven repayment programs. And where do we see most residents going? If you're single, or if you're the sole earner in your household, I would consider what's called the repay or the revised pay as you earn program. And if you have a significant other, a partner, maybe you're married and they're also making money, You'll probably want to consider one of the other income-driven plans. It's called the pay program. It just has a little bit more flexibility where you can actually just base your payments off of your income. And when I'm talking about these income-driven options, let's say that you're making, I guess $1,200 or $12,000 a month. And so then if you're making $12,000 a month, if you take 10% of that, that would be the amount that would be allocated for your student loan. So it'd be about $1,200 a month is kind of an example there. So these repayment programs are about 10% of your take-home pay. And that's really kind of a great way to get started. And obviously, as you go from resident to fellow, you know, your income's probably going to go up a little bit. And then, of course, there'll be a jump when you become an attending physician. So, you know, just by nature of your career, going from 60,000 to maybe 300,000 as an attending physician, there would also be commensurate with that increase in income and increase in payment. But it's a whole lot easier to make a $2,000 monthly payment when you're making attending money.
There's also, is there the opportunity for residents to just pay the interest? So they have their principal and then just say every month I'm going to pay the interest on that loan. And so that it doesn't accrue any additional, but I know at the end of my training, that $200,000 in our example is going to be sitting there waiting for me.
Absolutely. You can definitely pay the interest. I'd say that these income-driven plans, they are not built in a way that will really cover all of your interest when you're in training, unless you have your partner, you're married, and they're making significant money. Because until your income is close to what your debt size is, the monthly payment that you're going to have in an income-driven plan is probably not going to be enough to cover the interest. Because, you know, the interest on your loans, if you have like a $200,000 loan at a 6 or a 7% interest rate, kind of doing the quick math here, it's probably about $1,500 a month is what the interest is. And that's a lot of money in residency. And like, I know some people, they're like, I'm going to just pay this interest and I'm really going to, you know, make it so the loan balance doesn't go up. But that's definitely an option. And where you can pay up to the interest on the loan, it really depends on how much loans you have, you know. Yeah. And the average, you know, physician these days is 200,000, but I, you know, meet a lot with those that have $350,000, $400,000. Yeah. And so that's where it starts to get a little bit harder to break even on the interest. But you definitely have the ability, you know, if you have the cash to do that, you could.
Certainly, or as you talked about, refinancing down to a lower interest rate, so you're not paying 12%.
Yeah, and maybe that's where, you know, we've talked a little bit about federal student loans, because that's probably the majority of what you have, right? But also, let's say that, you know, you have some private student loans and you've refinanced those, they will give you $100 monthly payments. So a bunch of big private lenders out there that you're probably getting correspondence from. I know that if you're a doctor, you're probably going to get inundated by these companies, but they will allow you to get low monthly payments while you're in training, where you can have $100 monthly payments. And it's probably not enough to cover the interest on the loan. But what it does is it allows you to kind of toe the line in the meantime, and, you know, potentially get a little bit of a lower interest rate if you refinanced your private student loans and you have a low required payment of $100 a month, which you could always pay a little bit more, but it's just nice to not have a required payment of $1,000 when you just don't have the cash flow.
Yeah. Our next question is something that I think there are a lot of options for residents. Can you talk about some of the loan forgiveness programs that are out there?
Yeah. So this is where, you know, all this talk about these income-driven plans and those sort of things starts to really come together. And there's really two large federal forgiveness programs that I want to touch on. The first one is called Public Service Loan Forgiveness. And we're going to go into detail on that one because it is very, very helpful to a lot of physicians. And I've seen many, many doctors go through this program and have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars forgiven in student loans. And the other one is called taxable or income-driven repayment forgiveness. And there is some similarities to this one. This one, you know, we'll spend just a minute on this here. And this is you need to be on what's called an income-driven plan, or IDR plan, like we talked about, and this is over 20 to 25 years. And really the first way to determine, you know, should I even do this forgiveness program is first we look at what your attending income is compared to your student debt. I mean, you can't really look at the comparison right now when you're a resident or a fellow compared to your debt because it's probably lower, right, than that. But when you're making attending income, are you going to be making more than you owe? And if you're not, that is where I would look into loan forgiveness. If you're going to be working in primary care, right? And let's say you borrow $250,000 and your income's going to be 200 grand when you start as an attending physician afterwards. That's definitely a situation where I would consider one of the loan forgiveness options. And starting with the taxable forgiveness program, your student debt needs to be 2 times your income. So what I attending, so I'm saying that you need to have $400,000 of student loans in this case and need to be making about $200,000 of income. And let's say that you're capped out at that income threshold. That's where the numbers start to work out for that forgiveness program, where you make payments based on your income for 20 years, and then whatever your loan balance is outstanding after the 20 years, whether it's $100,000 or it's $300,000 of student loans, that amount of loans is forgiven in that year, but you are taxed on this. So just think about it. Let's say that you had $400,000 of student loans and you're living in California. That's a high, you know, state income tax state, right? And you're making good money. So then that $400,000, you get that forgiven, and then you got to pay 50% taxes on that, which could be 200 grand in there.
Wow.
And I don't love this program just because I feel like this program fits more for those of your peers that are chiropractors, that are veterinarians, that are just in these other you know, kind of professions that don't have quite the earning potential that physicians do. Okay, but that is an option in terms of forgiveness. Now I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about public service loan forgiveness, or PSLF. So PSLF, you have to be on an income-driven repayment program. That's that repay or the pay program where the payments are about 10% of your income. The second is you need to be employed by a non-for-profit or a 501c3. Those of you that are listening, I'm assuming that you're working at a non-for-profit, you know, academic center right now, so you're checking that box. You have to be working full-time. I know you're working full-time as a resident. And then the last requirement there is you need to make 120 monthly payments, or this occurs after a decade. So effectively, if you enroll in one of these income-driven plans and you have 5 years of residency, let's say, you do general surgery, and then you stay on at an academic center for 5 years after training, whatever your loan balance is outstanding, let's just throw out the $400,000 again, that is forgiven. But there is no taxes levied on this balance. So what we're saying is that this forgiveness program is half the time, it's 10 years, and you can get credit while you're in residency or in training, and whatever the loan balance is outstanding after a decade, this is forgiven tax-free. And you know, what this ends up doing is it can bring the cost of your overall loan, you know, somewhere in the $100,000 or maybe the $150,000 range is the total out-of-pocket for you. And I know that sounds really, really great on the surface, right? And it is. And there's been a lot of doctors that have had success with the program. And recently, as of February this year, there's been about 450,000 public servant borrowers that have had their loans forgiven through the program. Because that's always a big question that I get is, Andrew, is this program really legit? Should I do this? Should I take the time to go through the paperwork? And for a lot of doctors, it does make sense. But just know that once you transition from resident, fellow, into attending, you have to be at a non-for-profit or a 501c3. So this is most academic centers. This is regional hospitals. This is the Veteran Affairs. You know, so you are a little bit more constrained in your job opportunity. So you couldn't be working in private practice or a private group if you wanted to pursue that program. So one of those things that you have to reconcile with when you're deciding on forgiveness.
Got it.
Gosh, Andrew, so many things you've been informing us. It's just some, especially this particular program sounds too good to be true, but I think from what you're telling me, I think many residents, I'm sure, will think about this. And, you know, we have noticed some residents struggle to make payments, and finance is a major stressor. That's one thing they come to see us, and we, well, we reach out to you and others, you know, in the profession. So what are some things that you could say, how do they reduce their overall debt structure? Any thoughts on that?
When you're in residency, and I'm not a doctor, but, you know, you're just trying to keep your head above water a lot of times in residency. And you're not going to be able to put aside enough money in your retirement savings to you know, really accelerate that, right? And like we've talked about student loans already, you're probably not going to be able to pay $3,000 a month when you're in residency to really chip away at these. But you can start to educate yourself on finances. And, you know, because that you just don't get a lot of education on these sort of things in medical school unless you seek
or residency.
Or residency, for that matter. You're right. A lot of times you just don't have the bandwidth for it, right? You can only allow so many things in your head when you're studying for your step exams and getting ready for the didactics and all the things that you need to do, right? So how do you compartmentalize, you know, these finances and kind of the elephant in the room, the $300,000 that I owe.
That's
right.
True.
But I think that I would really start with reading books or listening to podcasts or finding a great financial blog. Like the company that I work for is called the White Coat Investor, and they have a ton of different free financial resources, but just trying to kind of, you know, pick up on little things here and there. You can also ask, you know, the senior resident or the attendings that you're working with. And I know financial topics can sometimes be taboo, but try to kind of learn about that. But I will say that learning finances is way, way easier than your day job. It's way easier than all these hard years of work that you had to put in to become a physician. And just a little bit of learning really compounds and will go a long way, whether it's learning how to invest or it's learning about your retirement accounts at work or the types of insurances, disability and life that a lot of physicians need, right? Or it's understanding a little bit of these student loan programs. But I will say, if you can just get your arms around these things early on, as much as you can, it'll pay big dividends for you later down the road.
Yeah, gosh, that's a lot of information, Andrew. We have learned a lot, and I'm sure our residents will really learn by listening to this. So as always, we invite our guests to leave us with a pebble. That's a tip that you can give us. And that we'll start with the tip. People will listen to the tip, that pebble, and then say, gosh, let me listen to this whole podcast. So what is the pebble you're going to leave with us?
I would say that in regards to your student loans, if you can get educated on your repayment options, on your forgiveness options, this can save you tens, and if not tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. and could potentially get you into a situation of work being optional or moving into less hours earlier on in your career than you could imagine. So a small investment in your student loans will go a very long way for you financially.
I think that's an amazing advice, because we're seeing more and more of our residents, once they go into practice, and this is especially true of women, going part-time after a period of time, even mm-hmm. retiring. And so having the financial security to be able to do that and not feel like you've got this weight around your neck that you're constantly carrying around is huge advice. So that was, thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. And it's been very informative for us too. And thanks for your time.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me, you know, on this important topic for your residents.
Thanks so much.
Ripple's Physicians Wellbeing is made possible by the Joe R. and Teresa Lozano Long School of Medicine Office for Graduate Medical Education. To contact us or learn more about the Wellness Home, visit gmewellness.utesca.edu.
This podcast is inspired by the Dalai Lama's powerful quote, "Just as ripples spread out when a single pebble is dropped into water, the actions of individuals can have far-reaching effects." We provide physicians with pebbles, tangible and actionable practices that can help make positive impacts in their personal and professional lives.